get started.
Yeah, we're going to do the amendment first, right? So that's all 2 years ago. House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, March 8th, 2017. And open a work session on House Bill 2638.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2638.
Representative Olson moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2638. Is there any discussion?
We have just a word about what the Dash
4 amendments. Yeah, please.
Certainly, Chair Barker, members of the committee, the Dash 4 amendments incorporate the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s. The Dash 1s modify language on the interest earned in the fund and how that is incorporated back into the fund. The Dash 2 corrects references. So both of those amendments are contained within here. We also add additional statutory references to the Department of State Police for when they take over this program. We move out the effective date by 6 months to give ODOT and State Police enough time to make this happen. And we include the current Oregon administrative rule that defines what a test violation is within the statute itself.
Okay, thank you. Any Representative further? G, this is our IID bill.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Further discussion? Yes.
Thank you. Chair Barker, I'm going to be a no on it today. I'm still concerned about the cost and if it's going to cost the state troopers down the road. I'm also concerned about the ongoing cost to those who are using these devices and if we are going to ultimately have the wrong effect that we want as we run up those costs. So I know there's going to be much more discussion on this in the pub sub, and so I'll continue to look at it there.
Okay, thank you. No further discussion. Are there any objections other than the one noted? Thank you. Move the amendment. Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2638 as amended be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2638 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any more discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Chair Barker. To clarify, I was attempting to be a no on the bill, not on the amendment.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Rep. Stark, you are no, though.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. All right. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2171 and 2600.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, 2171 and 2600 both deal with CASAs, which are court-appointed special advocates. These are folks appointed by courts who come in and represent children and may make recommendations to the court. House Bill 2171 requires CASA volunteer programs to maintain a volunteer base large enough so that a CASA can be appointed in all proceedings and to have a supervisor to volunteer ratio that is appropriate. 2600 moves the state agency oversight of the CASA volunteer programs from the Oregon Housing and Community Services to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. Excuse me. I am state representative from the Albany area. And the reason that we bring House Bill 2600 to you today is just to give you a little bit of history behind it. But basically, the bill is fairly simple. It's a shift from moving CASA under the Volunteer Commission to the Criminal Justice Commission. And there's some strategies behind why we're doing that, which Representative Sanchez is going to mention, and then some other folks, too, that are members of CASA in the back will be sharing as well. But this started probably about a year and a half ago. I was a member of the Criminal Justice Commission for 8 years, and Representative Stark now has taken over my place. But the point being is that I started paying attention to what was happening with CASA across the state, and it was like they didn't have a rudder on their ship. With the leadership, and there was just a disconnect that was going on there with the Volunteer Commission. And I'm not speaking out poorly. I don't want you to walk away thinking bad feelings with Volunteer Commission. It just didn't seem like there was a good fit going on there. In the meantime, I started looking at different homes that CASA could maybe land in, and actually felt that Criminal Justice Commission might be the best fit. And so with that, I started having a conversation with the director of CJC, started having the conversation with many of the folks through CASA, and then also with a number of you throughout the building, to the point where we're at today now with 2,600. So I'll just kind of stop right there.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Tana Sanchez, House Representative for District 43. Just want to talk a little bit about CASA and my experience over the years working in foster care systems. So, you know, I've had many, many different interactions with CASA folks and recognize that their work is so vital to the communities that I've worked with and many other communities who support kids and who are in foster care and families. What I know about them is that they make a difference in how the court sees the work, you know, that's going on around there, around DHS, and how they're able to really move mountains for some kids. And there's not enough. That's a whole other issue. But what I also know, just in terms of this issue in particular, to be able to be supported in a sort of a supervisory situation or a just a structural way, it makes sense to have somebody know who you are and what you do and how you move forward in this process. The Criminal Justice Commission has a better understanding, I think, of the pipeline from child welfare into the criminal justice system in and of itself. It totally makes sense of that unfortunate reality that we're dealing with kiddos in the foster care system. It made sense to me that we'd have a better opportunity for folks to speak the same language. Not that, again, the volunteer commission is a bad thing at all, but they don't speak the same language. They don't understand the processes that we're going through in those types of situations. And I think that CASA really just needs that support to be able to do their work in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Dwayne Stark, House District, State Representative, House District 4 in Southern Oregon. And specifically, I want to talk about House Bill 2171. And CASAs, for me, I interact with CASAs on a regular basis in my daily life outside of the legislature. As a foster parent and adoptive parent, I've experienced what it's like to not have a CASA, and I've experienced what it's like to have a CASA. CASAs have a very unique role in the system. They both know how to speak legalese in court, and they also know how to speak the love language of children. And so I've seen, even in my own case, where CASAs were in court and the DHS had goofed some things up and couldn't technically make some specific requests of the court, couldn't actually say what they wanted to happen because their paperwork was not complete. And yet the CASA was able to be a voice there for the child and for the system, for the foster parents, for everybody, to be able to look at it in an objective point of view and have that legal standing in court. It was so important. I've also seen their love language that they have, where I've worked with children in residential care. One child that I was working with, he'd been trafficked, or his parents started trafficking him when he was 2 years old. And so that happened for 2 years. He went into residential treatment at age 4, and I was working with him from ages 7, 8, working with this boy. And this boy had been through so many different residential treatments, so many foster homes, and there was only, he didn't even remember his parents' names, by the way. There was only one person outside of that building that he knew the name, and that was his CASA. The one person who was the continuity of care for him was his CASA. I mean, it's so important to have a CASA for these cases. I could go on and on with all these different examples of why we need CASAs. In fact, the state already recognized that we need CASAs for foster, and we've made it a mandate saying that every child will have a CASA, that we will assign that. Now, this is where my other role in the community comes into play, when I discovered that something didn't line up. Long before Wally Hicks ever tricked me into running for office, I was working in the community as an outreach pastor. And so I work with the foster community, at-risk youth, and so forth. And I sat down one day with the CASA director in Josephine County, and I asked her, I said, hey, I heard that you guys need 200 CASAs in order to fill the need here in Josephine County. You know what? I can recruit from the community. I can recruit. I will help get you CASAs. And she said, no, don't do that. I can't handle them all. I said, well, what do you mean? You told me there's 200 children who don't have a CASA and you need CASA, you know, CASAs, so I'll go get them for you. And they said, no, well, actually we can't. And the reason we can't is our national credentialing has a limit on the number of CASAs that we can have per supervisor. per paid supervisor. And that's in the ballpark, dependent on how you count it, it's about 30 costs per paid supervisor. And they said, we don't receive enough funding to actually have that. And I said, wait a minute, so the state has mandated that every child has a CASA, but they're not, even if you recruited enough volunteers, you don't have enough money for the paid staff that you're required to have in order to maintain your national certification. They said, that's correct. And I said, long before, you know, good old Wally Hicks and his maneuvers, I said, you know, if I ever have the opportunity to change that, I will. And so it took me 2 years in this building to figure out and track down Karen and others and say, how do we actually come up with a bill that addresses this? That's what House Bill 2171 is intended to do. It's intended to bring our funding levels for CASAs, for their supervisors, their paid supervisors, so we actually can complete the mandate that we've been given. There are a lot of people that will testify today about the need for that, how important it is, and what that be. A quick comment on the finances of it. Right now, there's a whole bunch of different ways that we can count what money is needed. And we're still taking a look at that from several different lenses to figure out the final dollar amount. We don't have an LFO number on that so far. And so that conversation is ongoing, but we want to start out with a concept right now.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of this panel? Thank you, panel. Appreciate it. Call Dick Withnell, Brittany Hope, and Jennifer Mylanek. Mr. Withnell, I believe you have to leave, so you go if you would like to go first.
Okay, thank you very much. Unfortunately, go ahead. Though.
Please remember to identify yourself for the
record. My name is Dick Withnell, a businessman here in Salem. Only in America would a used car salesman be talking in front of three police officers. Well, I came into the foster care system to support it, kicking and screaming, doing the methamphetamine, which was in Marion County here. And the unintended consequence, of course, were these kids coming out of these homes. And so we here in Salem, when Brian Johnston, you might remember Brian, the late Brian Johnston, was the interim director for Department of Human Services, and I and other businessmen challenged the community to have foster care for foster care families, and we did that. But then most recently I found out about CASA, and what stimulated me there was the picture in the Argonian 1 year ago of these two kids that just had come out of a foster care bad situation. They looked like they came out of Auschwitz. Also in that article, it talked about the suits that were against the Department of Human Services and what that dollar amount was. I got a real burn in my saddle finding out that the CASA was a federal unfunded mandated program, as well as the state is a mandated unfunded program. And when I dug more into this, and seeing these kids and then digging into these malpractices that were happening throughout the state, I challenged some legal people to dig into how much money this was and what the consequences were of not having CASA. There was $150 million paid out in the state of Oregon the last 5 years on malpractice. And when we dug into those cases, not one of them had a CASA. Not one of them had a CASA. For us here in the state of Oregon, we pay out $650 million to serve for CASA. And that only handles about 44% of the kids. Excuse me for my glasses. I just had cataract surgery. When you get that old, you'll have that also. There's 11,500 kids in CASA, in foster care right now, and we're funding 44% of that. It would take approximately $15 million to have the funding for all of CASA, in the state of Oregon. We paid out $150 million in malpractice for not having CASA. So I hope that you will look at the CASA not as an expense, but as a purchase for return on investment. And we're not talking about widgets here. We're talking about transformation of lives, which gets all the people with the big hearts all warm and fuzzy. Or you can talk about a return on investment, on money, on changing these lives, and you get a win-win. Whether you're talking to, you know, Barry Goldwater, or you're talking to Adlai Stevenson, as Brian Johnson and I used to argue about all the time. Any questions for me?
Any questions? Thank you. If you need to leave, you know, feel free to
thank you.
Step out. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and Vice Chair Olson and Vice Chair Williamson and committee members. My name is Jennifer Malenik. I'm the Executive Director of CASA in Jackson and Josephine Counties for the past 11 years. And really, I'm here to testify most importantly for House Bill 2171. I'm not here necessarily to testify about the crisis for the children in foster care that's currently happening in our state, but it was pretty disheartening to read the Statesman's Journal this week and read those stories. In fact, as much as I'm exposed to in my daily work, I couldn't actually finish the article because I didn't know if I could then finish my day. I think we all agree it's pretty unforgivable that this goes on, but we have not figured out together a way to stop this. Oregon's been trying to address this problem for the 11 years that I've been in my role, and many wonderful programs have been instituted along the lines of prevention, which do wonderful help for children and families, yet the predicament is growing, and it's increasing. In Jackson and Josephine counties alone, it's up 20% more children with founded cases last year than the year before, which is the largest jump I've ever seen. And systems, all the systems, state systems included, are being crushed under this burden. So as everybody sort of organizes to address this issue again, there's, in my opinion, a program, a proven program that's already in place. It's here. It's in front of everybody's eyes. It's effective. And it's CASA. And with appropriate funding, not necessarily that our program would be completely weighted upon the support of the state. I think we would always be raising money, but we could do so much more for the children out there. And as Mr. Whitnell just testified, the state spent $150 million where it could have spent a lot less and had costs for all those children. Because when there's a CASA assigned, there's another pair of eyes on those children. There's a volunteer who has dedicated their life to looking after this child for no pay and no recognition. They're very humble people as well, but they're in the homes, they're at the schools, they're at, speaking to doctors, they know who the parents are, they know who the foster parents are, and it's another set of eyes that currently we don't have. And I will tell you that 99% of the children who have a CASA do not experience reabuse, and that's a documented fact in our programs. Children know immediately that the cost is there for because they want to be, and they respond to that. It's not another paid person coming into their life. Nothing against paid people. They're very well-meaning. But the children know that the cost is a volunteer. And caseworkers know that if a cost is assigned, that they have some additional help, too, that there's another pair of eyes on those children. We don't always agree with child welfare. But that's really the beauty of the CASA role, is we are an independent lay voice with only that child's best interests at heart. We don't face any bureaucracy or red tape or PERS. No offense. But we're duly appointed by the court. We have authority to investigate situations and have access to information that the attorneys don't even have. Sometimes the attorneys are asking us for the information that we've gained so they have more information to best advocate for their clients. And judges read our reports first. They look for them. They're the only ones that they get that have continuity, history, and make sense. And I want to read you something, because I couldn't bring a child with me, but I wanted to bring their voice. And let me just explain the circumstances. We have a CASA, Art Coolidge, who's been with us for about 12 years. He is the ultimate nerd. He tutors his children. He's a math genius. I'm not even sure how many children that he's advocated for over the years. But he was visiting a young man, who 13 years old, who had just been moved to his new placement. It was to be a permanent placement, but the young man was just still out of sorts over the move. And so Art went out there immediately to meet with him, and he couldn't wait for Art to get there because he knew Art. It was a familiar face. And towards the end of the visit, Art looked at him and said, "I can't wait to see what you're going to do with your life." And Art said he was sort of surprised because the kid really responded. He looked at him with this big beaming smile on his face. And a couple of months later, Art got this card in the mail. The fact that this boy addressed an envelope, I think, is deserving of having a CASA. But he wrote inside the card, "Thank you for everything you've done for me. I can't stress how much you have helped me in school and life. I'm glad to have you in my life and can't wait to see what I'm going to do because of you. I'm special to have you as my CASA. I hope you have a Merry Christmas." Now, Art was extremely flattered by this, but I don't even think he knew the immensity of it. And it's a 13-year-old boy. What 13-year-old boys even express themselves? We got an email from a CASA just recently, and it read, "Recently I sent an email card and then a gift card to my 10-year-old foster child who I'm advocating for. The email card involved some swimming fish, and the gift card note, in the gift card note, I suggested she buy some Play-Doh that I knew she liked. The following is the email response from the child." This is a 10-year-old girl. "Thank you for the gift card. I will have fun with the Play-Doh, and thank you for saving my life. What would I do without you? I love, love, love the card. The fish are just swimming around so happy. You are my superhero because you saved me. If you didn't save me, I would not be alive." I mean, those are sort of words no 10-year-old I know should ever have to say. But this is how she felt about her CASA. Conversely, one more. This was sent to a CASA in our office from parents who he had championed along their journey to recovery. They had some, one of the parents has profound disabilities, and they both had drug abuse, and their child had been removed. But when the CASA was appointed to the child, he got to know the parents, and he believed in them. He saw something in them that he felt was worth championing. So they write, "Thanks for everything you do, and know that this picture right here of two heroin addicts and an unbelievable story of survival is a true miracle because of people like you. I had 0% chance of survival, and yet I survived. Writer prognosis, quadriplegia, cerebral palsy, Tyler, 14 years of heroin addiction, overdoses, infections, facing prison. But because of people like you, our success was possible. No judgment from the start, and believing in something that could never happen, never ever work, unless useless to even think it could, but you did. You believed in us. Thank you. We love our baby and love life and know how precious it is and the second chance we've been given. We will work to do more good in our sober life and pay it forward." CASAs are trained. They oftentimes come into our program not really believing in parents because they're really concerned about the abuse the children have gone through. But by the time they leave our training, they know that the best answer is for children to be reunited with their families whenever safe and possible. And so they are huge advocates for that. In our community family court, our judges have recognized in our southern counties that when there's a CASA appointed to every family and community family court, there equals 100% graduation rate. State funding is only 17% of the budget statewide for CASA programs. In our two counties down south, it's 8%. But we raise the rest, 6-1. But that doesn't even get us to 50% service delivery. In our counties alone, we triage more than 700 children's cases each year that we cannot assign to a CASA. Our staff bears the emotional fallout of reading cases of child abuse that no one here would ever choose to know, and then putting them in a file cabinet, pulling them out again with some hope, and then putting them back in the file again. Each and every child victim of abuse has the right to have a CASA. It saves money, and it saves lives. One more story. Jessie is a young woman whose siblings were all adopted when she was an infant, but her aunt, who adopted them all, just couldn't take her because she was a baby. So Jessie went into foster care. She moved homes 13 times and even shattered one of her vocal cords from screaming so loud out of frustration. But she had a CASA, Harry Howard, who was with her for 18 years, by her side, encouraging her and giving her one person to trust. She found a permanent foster placement when she was 13, but Harry still remained in her life. He attended all of her athletic accomplishments and ceremonies, her high school graduation, and then he was at her college graduation, after which she herself became a CASA and she became a foster parent. But then she married and had a child of her own and gave up both. Recently, she took a relative's young child into foster care in her own home due to the relative's drug abuse. She knew we had a huge waiting list of children, so she went to court and asked for a CASA, Harry Howard, to be appointed to her new foster child. And Harry couldn't say no. Jessie told me 2 weeks ago that thank God for Harry, or she might have a child herself in foster care today. That he changed everything for her so at least she can be there to help other children and have a wonderful life herself. So these are only a few of the hundreds of stories of triumph I could tell, and they go throughout the state. But I don't know of anyone else who had the time or the heart to do for Jessie what Harry did for her. And he turns 90 years old this year. He's still taking cases. He rides his motorcycle into our office. He just became a smart reader, and he's been doing this unpaid for 27 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Brittany Hope, and I'm from Washington County, and I'm a foster youth. Before I say anything more, I'd like to say thank you for having me here today. You'll hear lots of people give testimony and talk about this bill and what it means, but as you see me sitting in front of you today, you're seeing the real effects of CASA. My journey in the foster care system started when I was 15, and I came into care with severe trauma, and I was scared and alone. I didn't have people to support me, and having come into care and being rescued from an abusive situation, I had also been ripped from my community, my supports, and my school. I really was alone. I spent 8 months waiting to be assigned to CASA, which in the grand scheme of things maybe doesn't sound like a long time, but it looking back, it really did feel like forever. And that time I was completely clueless about what was happening in my court case, and I sat across the courtroom from my abusers with the strangers that were known as my attorney and my caseworker, and was ultimately re-traumatized by that experience. I had a judge, and was told that people were caring about me, but I didn't understand anything that was happening. The words that they used sounded like a foreign language, and the situations they put me in were completely, I wouldn't wish them on any child, but I wouldn't wish them on any child because of how lost I felt. My first CASA, who I got, I was almost 16, after 8 months, she really did save me. While her title was only a court-appointed special advocate, she was everything to me. She was my support system, she was my mentor, and she was my best friend. As my advocate, she translated the context of my court case in a language that I could understand. One of the biggest problems we see with teenagers is the way that they act out in their cases. And part of that is because they don't understand what's happening. My CASA took the context of my case and translated it into appropriate language for a 15-year-old to understand. She met with me weekly. She checked in on me in school, at home. She helped me obtain school supplies when I didn't have anyone else to. She helped me access services from DHS and surrounding programs that I would not have otherwise been able to access. She made sure that people took care of me, and when it came to actually being in court, she was the only person that sat with me with no ulterior motive or any personal agenda and spoke up for what was in my best interest. As a child who was potentially being re-victimized by a system. After about a year and a half, my COSTA had to leave because of other conflicts, but ultimately there was a lack of support for her as a COSTA because she's a volunteer and unpaid. I then waited about 2 years on a waiting list to receive a new COSTA. And then that CASA also was not going to work for my case. And so then I waited another 8 months or so for my current CASA. My current CASA is wonderful. And even to this day, as a transition age foster youth, meaning that I'm over the age of 18, but I'm not old enough to, or not ready enough to be completely independent yet, she is the person who stands up for me in my case with no ulterior motive or agenda. When she speaks for what I need, she speaks for what's in my best interest, not what's in the best interest for the state, not for what's in the best interest of my former guardians, not for what's in the best interest of funding, but for what is right for me as a human and as someone who is underrepresented and in what is my case. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and we really appreciate you coming down and telling your story. It's very helpful, so thank you. Okay, thank you, Pam. Next, I'll call Dana Schmid, Carrie Reek, is that close enough? Tracy Blood, please.
Whoever wants to start, go ahead, and I just remember to identify yourself.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Barker, and Vice Chair Olson, and Vice Chair Williamson, and representatives. My name is Diana Schmid. I am the current president of the Oregon CASA Network. I live in Portland, and I have been a court-appointed special advocate in Washington County since 2001. I also serve as a CASA representative on the Oregon Volunteers Commission. With me here today are Carrie Reek, the Oregon CASA Network Executive Director, as well as Executive Director of the Benton County CASA Program, and Tracy Blood, the Executive Director of the Grant Harney CASA Program and the Interim Director of the brand new Frontier CASA Program in Gilliam and Wheeler Counties. Tracy is the President-Elect of the Oregon CASA Network. I'm going to change gears here a little bit and testify first in support of House Bill 2600, proposing to move the administration of state funds from the Oregon Volunteers Commission to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. And I'd like to especially thank Representatives Olson and Sanchez for supporting this bill. As you may know, CASA previously was housed with the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. When it was abolished in 2012, most programs moved to agencies with which there was an obvious fit. CASA was different. There didn't seem to be a place that was likely that didn't present a conflict of interest. CASA was placed with the Oregon Volunteer Commission in the Department of Housing. On the one hand, it might have made sense to some that CASAs, citizen volunteers, would fit with the Volunteer Commission. However, CASA volunteers aren't usual volunteers, and the CASA program isn't just about volunteers. CASA volunteers are highly trained citizen advocates who work under the supervision of CASA executive directors and trained staff. We work within the child welfare system and the juvenile court system, and we participate in continuing education related to that on an ongoing basis. Most importantly, the work and the culture of the Oregon Volunteers Commission and CASA are quite different. Oregon Volunteers' primary mission has been to administer federal dollars for AmeriCorps projects. which are various and can range from environmental projects to Habitat for Humanity and many worthwhile projects in between. CASA's exclusive mission is to advocate for foster children who have been abused or neglected and to help them into permanent homes safely, quickly, and effectively. We do that through ongoing programs in essentially every community in Oregon that share the mission. CASA is a grassroots program, community by community. Local CASA programs in our state united just a few years ago through the Oregon CASA Network to speak with one voice, to advocate for CASA programs throughout Oregon, and to provide cost efficiencies for training and education. Still, CASA remains locally oriented and locally operational. Oregon Volunteers, on the other hand, is more of a top-down organization, offering and administering federal funds to approved projects in various locations around Oregon. Because of the different structures and cultures, the relationship between CASA and Oregon Volunteers hasn't always been the easiest fit. So CASA programs throughout Oregon and the Oregon CASA Network support the legislation to move administration of state funds for our programs to the Criminal Justice Commission. Like CASA, it works at an intersection between human services and the legal system. It is connected to communities throughout Oregon. Like CASA, it works with the court systems and in the realms of drug court, family drug treatment, mental health, teen court. It interfaces with the child welfare system. With appreciation to the Oregon Volunteers Commission for taking on CASA when we were at risk of becoming a foster child, we respectfully request that Oregon help CASA find its own forever home with the Criminal Justice Commission. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, and Vice Chair Williamson and committee, thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Carrie Reek, and I'm the Oregon CASA Network Director, as well as the Benton County CASA Program Director. I've been an advocate for 14 years. I've also served as the president and president-elect for the Oregon CASA Network. And I'm honored to be here today to talk to you about the potential or hopeful move to the Criminal Justice Commission. As Diana mentioned earlier, it's the intersection between the human services and the judicial system. When we first started looking at what would be an appropriate home, there was obvious choices that pop into mind, DHS or the judicial branch, they create conflicts of interest. CASA is a unique program. There is no other programs like it in the state, and it's that interesting intersect between human services and the judicial system that makes it really difficult to sometimes be understood wherever we're at. We do have to speak, as Representative Stark mentioned, we have to speak as the legalese in the courtroom, but also then translate it and be able to talk to parents who sometimes have, a fourth grade level understanding, and they're in the courtroom and they're being thrown the information. Caseworkers are overworked. CASA's often spend a lot of time trying to help not only the child, but the parents understand what the system is about, what is trying to be accomplished, and how we're not there to take away their child, but rather to look out for their child's best interest and ensure that they have a safe place to go to. Some of the things that we looked at when we first started having that discussion about where's an appropriate home for CASA, we looked at the alignment and support of the mission for our work. That was critical anywhere we went. The financial transparency of the state-administered funds that are allocated to CASA, knowledge of the juvenile court system as well as the child welfare system and specialty courts, holding CASA accountable in an appropriate manner to make sure that we're doing what we need to do for the children that we serve, open and communication, and recognition and respect for our work. We also felt that it was critical to have someone that understood about writing grants and what it took to administer grants, as well as completing, doing research in the areas that we work with. That includes drug court, there's mental health courts, and teen court. So there's a wide range of areas that are just a good match with us for Criminal Justice Commission. More importantly, I think the Criminal Justice Commission's their alignment or their goal is to really focus on a change of lifestyles with those that they work with within the drug courts and the various specialty courts. And that's what our role is, too, not only for today's, for the parents and the children today, but the ongoing generations, to be able to make lifestyle changes that make that have a positive impact on the children and the parents, on our community, and in our future generations. And that's what we see with specialty courts. So we, in closing, I'd just like to say that we, Oregon CASA Network and local CASA program directors, believe that the Criminal Justice Commission best aligns with our work as CASA, with the balance between, again, the human services and judicial, and we ask for your support in moving it forward for a move for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, and committee members. My name is Tracy Blood, and as Diana mentioned, I am President-elect of the Oregon CASA Network and also Executive Director of Grant-Harney County CASA and Interim Executive Director of Frontier CASA, serving Wheeler and Gillum counties. The Oregon CASA Network was founded by local program executive directors to provide support to local programs, increase consistency between the programs, and to add a measure of accountability for each of the 22 programs serving 35 counties. Each program is uniquely structured to serve the needs of their community, each striving to achieve the mission of serving every child in care while meeting or exceeding national standards. We have programs that operate in highly populated areas, whereas other programs have fewer people but serve larger geographical areas. In addition to a range of size and service areas, Oregon is home to the Grand Ronde Tribal CASA program. While there is large diversity between our programs and the communities we serve, the Oregon CASA Network is able to share best practices and offer each other support to best serve abused and neglected children in Oregon. I'd like to thank Representative Olson and Representative Sanchez for sponsoring HB 2600. Thank you.
So should we proceed? Thank you. Thank you. I guess we'll just proceed. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair and representatives. We'd now like to testify in support of House Bill 2171 to increase funding for court-appointed special advocates programs throughout Oregon and to move toward the state mandate that all children in foster care be entitled to a CASA. And we'd like to thank Representatives Stark and Olson for sponsoring this bill. We've been asked, if CASAs are volunteers, why do you need funding? All CASA programs in Oregon are members of the National CASA Association that includes more than 75,000 CASAs across the country. National CASA works with nearly 1,000 programs in 49 states to support and promote court-appointed volunteer advocacy. Together, our goal is for every abused and neglected child to have a safe, permanent home and the opportunity to thrive. National CASA institutes standards and recommended management practices for all CASA programs. Compliance with the standards is mandatory for National CASA membership. Membership includes use of the name and the affiliation, including entitlement in Oregon to serve as legal parties to child dependency cases. The primary goal and guiding principle of the standard system is to strengthen local programs and to support our efforts to provide and ensure high-quality child advocacy. National CASA specifies recruitment, selection, and training procedures for CASA volunteers. Further, National CASA requires that staff members of each CASA program will supervise no more than 30 active volunteers or 45 cases at one time. As a footnote, we have trained peer coordinators in some programs who can supervise up to 15 advocates, with a staff supervisor overseeing up to 10 peer coordinators. CASA program staff, whether it's a small program with one full-time employee or a larger program with 30-plus employees, must know and stay current with all of the various expertise that is required of CASA programs: juvenile law, child welfare, mental health issues from trauma to substance abuse, and so on. CASA supervisors come from several related fields: social work, law, mental health, and criminal justice. Further, without full funding, each local CASA program must raise funds to support its efforts to recruit, train, and supervise volunteers. Bake sales, auctions, grant writing. With state funding averaging about 17% on average across Oregon, you can understand that local executive directors and staff must wear many hats and be skilled at a wide variety of capabilities. Our goal is to serve every foster child in Oregon who needs a CASA and to find a safe, permanent home for each of them. With funding from the last biennium and the hard-earned dollars raised by local programs, we were able to meet that need for about 44% of Oregon's foster children. We respectfully request that you help us move closer to our goal and join us in helping Oregon's foster children find forever homes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, and Vice Chair Williamson, and committee members. My name is Carrie Reek. I'm with the Oregon CASA Network and a local director. I want to start out by saying that CASA was actually started by a judge, and I don't know how many of you are aware of that. A judge in Seattle started it because he felt that he needed the perspective from a layperson, someone that wasn't a legal party, a current legal party to the case, who had a mission or an agenda that they had to represent in court. And he really needed someone to be able to be the voice for the child and talk about what the child need by doing research and investigating every aspect of the child's life and then being able to come forward and making the recommendations. So with that, we work very hard to ensure that every advocate has the support that they need to be effective and operate within their guidelines. But the child welfare is always changing, the law is changing, and staff has to keep up with every single aspect of that. And it's critical to provide that for each of the advocates. Every case is different. Every case has to be assessed for what the needs of the parents and most importantly, what the needs are of the child, which includes schools and making sure that the child can stay at the same school if they're removed and placed elsewhere, if at all possible. It's talking, we talk about the medical, dental, vision, ensuring all of those things happen, mental health assessments, we can't expect volunteer advocates to be experts in all those areas. It's critical that we have the staff to be able to do that. So with that, you know, it's every day. Jennifer talked about it earlier. Every day, directors and staff have to decide which child gets the CASA. And at the end of the day, we all have to go home hoping that we made the right decision, and we're not going to be reading about a child that we were not able to appoint on the front page of the paper. Thank you for your support, and thank you, Representative Stark, Representative Olson, for this being the sponsors.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, and committee members. I'm going to share a short story with you about the importance of CASA volunteers and how they can impact a young child's life. Recently, a mother of a young boy in my program came to the child's CASA volunteer concerned that something wasn't right in the home he was placed in. That volunteer was able to, this child had been placed in 5 homes in less than 6 months. The volunteer was able to request a court hearing so that the details of what she had discovered in the case could come before the court. DHS did not have a placement for this child once they learned he was being abused in his foster home. DHS was scrambling to try to figure out what to do with this child, including suggestions like placing the child in a hotel room with a DHS caseworker and returning the child to his mother, who was on a wait list to get into a treatment facility. The CASA came into the DHS meeting and worked with them to find a solution that included a safe home for the child. The CASA was able to work within our small community to locate a foster family and help to place that child in that home. When the mother was going to rehab, she sent the volunteer advocate a message thanking the volunteer for all of their help, saying she could never repay them enough and would be forever grateful and appreciative for the work they had done for her child. Thank you, Representative Stark and Representative Olson, for sponsoring House Bill 2171. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Devaney, Grace Serbu, and Betsy Granger, please.
Is this working?
Yes, it is.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Williamson and Olson, and members of the Judiciary Committee. Excuse me. My name is David Devaney. I have been a CASA since 2013, and I also serve on a Citizens Review Board, where I have reviewed over 100 DHS foster care cases in the past year and a half. In my four-pay job, I am a chief financial officer for a firm that owns and manages commercial timberlands and commercial real estate throughout the Pacific Northwest. I'm a CPA by training. Today, I would like to give you some insight as to what being a foster child feels like, as well as advocate for additional funding investment from the state of Oregon and CASA. I want to share an excerpt from a talk I gave last fall as to why I do CASA work. I think it may assist you in understanding the mindset of foster children. Here's my excerpt. I have had the privilege of advocating for seven foster children. All of the children are different, but all of their stories are sad. Happy endings can happen, as we saw earlier this morning, but most foster children cases start with sad stories. I will detail three instances that occurred over a 10-week time period with one of my foster children for you today to try to see if I can share with you how a foster child thinks and feels. I was awakened one morning at 6:15 by a phone call from his mom and significant other. They told me they had relapsed hard on meth, oxy, weed, and alcohol. They were out of money, had no food, and were getting evicted. They had taken the children to a safe place outside the home and had their backpacks packed, and the boys were ready to go. They said their goodbyes and had told the boys this wasn't their fault, but they needed to get help and could no longer care for them. I asked why they called me instead of the authorities. They said they trusted me and that I knew the boys better than anyone else. They also said they knew I would do whatever I could to make turning over the boys as easy and non-traumatic as possible. They said they wanted no drama for the boys. Imagine that. Law enforcement and child services arrived shortly thereafter, and the boys were returned to foster care. This was the 10th and 8th placement for the boys, but they were able to move to the same home for the first time in many placements. Several weeks later, I ran into the Children's Home Observer, who works for their attorney. She told me she had recently visited the boys at their new home, and that when asked how things were going, the eldest answered, "I am learning to be a grown-up." When asked to clarify what that meant, he responded, "When they move me now, I only cry on the inside." I do not like the way he defines being a grown-up. Several weeks later, I was attending his school for an IEP meeting and decided to check in with him. Schools are a good place for CASAs and foster children to meet. It is away from the home, but in a safe and familiar place for the child. It allows a child more freedom and privacy to talk about issues if they need or want to. This child is usually very happy to see me. He's a natural salesman and wants to share his latest happenings with me, whether it is a new piece of clothing, a toy, a good mark from school, whatever. This day was different. As we approached each other from different ends of the hall, I could see he was being standoffish and distracted. He didn't want to look at me or engage me. As we got closer, I asked him, "What's up, dude? Everything okay?" He snapped back at me, "Why are you here?" I was a bit taken back. I explained that I had an IEP meeting at the school, just like the one we had had earlier for him, where we talked to the teachers, principals, resource team, etc., to help facilitate classroom issues and stuff. I told him I thought it would be fun to check in and see how school was going and maybe have him show me his classroom. He let out a big sigh of relief and looked down at his shoes, and then he very softly said, "I thought you were here to move me again." Talk about crying on the inside. Children need permanency. What most of us take for granted on a daily basis, the same house, the same bed, even the same people, foster children do not. CASAs help attain permanency, and that is why I continue to advocate for children in foster care. As in my earlier speech, now comes a financial request. The state mandate of CASA for every foster child is expensive, but there is clear evidence that the longer a child stays in foster care, the more expensive the cost to the state long term. Achieving permanency for a child early in a case saves both children and dollars. Please support, and in fact, please try to increase CASA funding. It is an investment that leverages more assistance to some of our most innocent and vulnerable citizens. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Grace Serbu. I've lived in Eugene about 30 years. I'm a retired nurse, so I tend to look at things from the caring end. But about 17 years ago, my stepson took his life on drugs as a practicing neurosurgeon. And that placed me in a position where my husband and I started funding Lane Community, Lane County juvenile drug system. So we have a private-public partnership where we spend a lot of money every year funding programs for drug treatment and youth, really all juvenile, in Lane County. So now I'm an eagle eye watching the county spend funds in Lane County, which is what brings me here, because I am convinced that the biggest bang for the buck is CASA, no question. Because of the subset of foster children who fall through the cracks and come into Serbu, that's the juvenile justice place in Eugene, I have seen so many cases where it would just be so much better to be long-term thinking and spending the money funding CASA long-term and keeping kids out of Serbu. My mission now, after 18 years, is to keep kids out of Serbu. And I can just encourage you to think long-term in terms of that. End of story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Barker and members of the committee. My name is Betsy Granger. I'm a CASA, and I'm also on the board of CASA for Multnomah, Columbia, and Washington counties. And I'm going to just speak very briefly about both of the bills. We strongly support the move to the Criminal Justice Commission. As was explained, it's just a much better fit for the organization because it does deal with communities and it deals with the court system, and it meshes much better for CASA than the Oregon Volunteer Commission. So we urge your support for that. With respect to the funding, I'd just like to explain a little bit how I became involved with CASA. I'm a retired attorney, and when I was looking for something to do with my time, I remembered back to when I was starting out as an attorney, Justice Kennedy spoke at a lunch about 30 years ago, and he had just joined the Supreme Court. And he was talking about what had surprised him about being on the Supreme Court and different things. And the one thing that struck me was he said, in almost every death penalty case he looked at, the defendant had been abused as a child. And so he challenged the group to basically do what they could to deal with abuse and neglect of children in life. So when I was looking for something to do with my time as a retired attorney, I was looking at CASA because it challenges people to get back into the system and try to help deal with abused and neglected children, which has such a ripple effect throughout society. I mean, it's a tragedy for the child, but it's a tragedy for all the people that have to come in contact with the child who's dealt with this. So it's just such an important organization. In the case I have currently, both of the biological parents of the child I work were victims of abuse and neglect. And I hope, you know, through the work we're doing, that we can break that cycle with this child. The child I'm working with is very young. When I first met her, she was 14 months old. She's getting close to 3 now. She knows who I am, but she doesn't really understand what my role in her life is, but she's been in 8 different foster homes in the last year and a half. So when I come in to see her, she usually just comes over and jumps up on my lap and talks to me. But, you know, she doesn't, I'm just the one constant in her life that she's had. So I just hope, you know, you can find the funding so more children can have CASAs, because it just is critical to have someone who can really speak and advocate for them, because they're in a system that is overwhelmingly confusing to them and to their families, and to have a CASA there is so important. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, panel. Next, I have 4 people left, so Shani Starr, Robin Christian, Heather Murphy, and Elizabeth Kushwa. Maybe drag another chair up. Or
good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Barker and the committee and the rest of the committee. Thank you so much. We know that you've heard a lot. We are here basically to just reinforce very quickly. I'm Heather Murphy, the Executive Director of the Lane County Program.
I'm Shani Starr, Executive Director, Marion County CASA.
Robin Christian, Executive Director of Clackamas County CASA.
Elizabeth Kushwa, Children First for Oregon and United for Kids.
Thank you.
And we're just here to thank Representative Stark and Olson again for sponsoring these bills so critical. You've heard the stories today. You've heard many, many points. We need to have a very strong home, and we need additional funding. So we appreciate your support moving this forward, and we echo all that has been shared with you so far. We know we've gone over, so we appreciate your patience. And I'm just underlining again, we represent children all around the state of Oregon, and so we really would appreciate more help to help more children. So thank you, and I'm going to let my colleagues make their points.
Thank you.
CASA is unique, and it doesn't fit perfectly into any agency structure, but we are a critical partner in protecting the children in Oregon. We continue to build the Oregon CASA network, and we have a vision for growing to meet the need. And we feel that the Criminal Justice Commission would be a strong administrative partner, opening new doors for us as we grow to provide the critical advocacy for more children in foster care and at jeopardy in the child welfare system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, Vice Chair Williamson, members of the Judiciary Committee, thank you so much. Robin Christian, I just want to say that as we continue to build, some of us, there have been many homes that have been explored, and the Criminal Justice Commission has emerged as the strongest fit. And we greatly appreciate Representative Olson and Representative Stark's leadership on both of these bills. I know that you've heard it said before, but there's a return on investment for what you do for CASA that is measured in more than just state savings. It's measured in saving children's lives. And that's something that we all deeply believe in. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Kushwa, Children First for Oregon and United for Kids. Thank you so much, Chair Barker and members of the committee, for hearing my testimony today. CASA, the CASA Network, CASA of Marion County, Oregon Foster Youth Connection are all part of United for Kids. I'm most closely associated with Oregon Foster Youth Connection because they're housed in our shop. So I get to see on a daily basis how this works. And last year, I got to take a panel of foster youth to the Family Law Conference, where they got to speak to a panel of judges. And the kids were telling their story. And one of the judges stood up and asked a question and said, well, where was your CASA? And one of the kids said, what's a CASA? And the other kid had to turn around and explain what a CASA. And she said, you don't have a CASA? And it was terrifying to know that judges statewide didn't understand the vagaries of the counties and how not every child has a CASA to help them navigate the system. In the public-private partnership, some of you may know that my spouse is a reformed district attorney, and he He has said for years that if every child had a CASA and if every CASA were paid, his caseload would have been cut in half. So in terms of long-term, from both ends of the spectrum, we strongly encourage you to both provide CASAs for every child in Oregon who needs one and to continue in the future when we have those funds to actually fund this important work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. Appreciate your testimony and especially appreciate the young lady that was brought in to testify. These bills are not ready to move today, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2171 and 2600 and open a work session on House.
We did that.
Okay.
We're adjourned.
Modified. All right.
We're done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, committee.